Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Our history has been filled with stories about secret societies, which supposedly retain vast amounts of historical and spiritual information passed down from previous cultures. Tradition says that only the wisest and most deserving of people were allowed to join these societies, and then only after many years of difficult trials. One of the most famous societies was the Rosicrucians, the ancient mystical order of the Rosicrucis, shortened to AMORC, still exists today, but now it's open to most anyone interested in joining. Our guest today is Stephen Armstrong, the director of the membership for AMORC. He is located in San Jose, California, and he will tell us about the modern-day Rosicrucians. Steve Armstrong, welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you very much. Just wanted to make one correction. I'm just a membership associate, not the director.
Okay, very good.
No worries.
All right. How long have you been a Rosicrucian?
I've been a Rosicrucian since 1998.
So what got you involved with the Rosicrucians?
Well, I had earlier, years ago, encountered the Rosicrucian Order at Rosicrucian Park. Back in 1977, I was walking through San Jose, visiting a friend, and I turned the corner, and shazam, there was Egypt, you know, full city block. And so I went into the museum, you know, picked up the booklet, Mastery of Life, and enjoyed the museum and read that, and it was great. I was on another trajectory at the time. But a seed was planted. And so years later, I was living in San Francisco, and my partner and I decided to go down to the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum in San Jose to visit, and it just clicked, and that seed, you know, burst forth, and I joined right away, and you know, I found a tremendous home in the Rosicrucian Order. So that really was, you know, that's how a seed gets planted years ago and then comes to fruition.
Okay. Now, the Rosicrucians, that means Rose Cross, right?
That's correct.
Where did that come from? Is that, you know, I've read things that was an old Tudor symbol, Tudors being one of the old monarchy families of England. Is that correct?
Well, it goes much, much farther back than that. The cross is one of the most ancient symbols of humanity. It's far predates Christianity. One of the earliest sun symbols is a circle with an equilateral cross inscribed in it. So for us, the rose on the cross is a symbol of the person with their arms outstretched, and the rose of the unfoldment of the soul personality over successive incarnations is shown. So this is really a completely non-sectarian, non-religious symbol. And it goes back, at least one can trace it to the 1600s, but there are similar images that go back much, much further, perhaps even to ancient Egypt.
Is this still a secret society? It used to be a secret society, didn't it?
Well, I always get a kick out of that. You know, with a full city block in San Jose, and similar places in like Curitiba, Brazil, and in outside London and in Paris, we're not doing a very good job of being a secret society. Things were secret in the past only because if you differed from the church and state, you'd get burned at the stake or have your head cut off. And so
that's a good reason to keep it under wraps.
Absolutely, sub rosa, if you will. Nowadays, that's not necessary in most of the world, thank heavens. Now we're a fraternal order of men and women who study mysticism, philosophy, science, etc. So, of course, there's passwords and stuff like that that is only shared within the fraternal world. But we are very open today. If you go to rosicrucian.org, we have so much material posted there for everybody. Because as you said, things really changed dramatically in 1909 when H.H. Lewis was initiated by the Rosicrucians of Toulouse into the Rosicrucian Mysteries, because they gave him the mandate to make these mysteries accessible to modern men and women. So it's a real, even one might say, a democratization of these mysteries, because they really are the patrimony of humanity. And now we have the freedom to disseminate them much more freely.
So anybody can join this order, is that correct?
Absolutely. Men and women are fully equal. We've always been a champion of integration and against any kind of discrimination. Even when some of the European esoteric groups were mad at us for having African Americans, we told them where to go. We're very big on that, and very open to all genders, LGBT community. It's about the only people who can't belong are people who are in some kind of institution where they don't have the privacy to do the studies and the rituals, etc. But that's not because of who they are as people. It's just because their circumstances don't permit it. But other than that, it's everyone is welcome to apply and join.
Now you say on your website, I believe, or somewhere I read, that you have to live a life consistent with the Rosicrucian principles and knowledge. What does that imply?
Well, in essence, it means that you are a good citizen of the country that you belong to, that you're a citizen of, that you, I think the traditional phrase is, do nothing against morals or religion. That would mean you wouldn't defame anybody. You try to live a good life. We have a Rosicrucian code of life, which is posted on the website, rosicrucian.org. We don't police people. We don't impose any dogma or doctrine or lifestyle on anyone. For example, vegetarianism and veganism are honored, but certainly not imposed on anyone. I'm not a vegetarian myself. Nobody's going to go around and police you. But it just means, be an ethical person. Be a good person. Okay. I mean, that's the duty of everybody.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it? Is this a religion?
No, not at all. We have no doctrines or dogmas. We are a philosophical fraternity, and the idea is that materials are presented, ancient traditions are presented, and if anything doesn't, we tell everybody, test everything, question everything. And if anything that is in our materials does not match your own experience, then just set it aside. The only thing we ask is that people read material respectfully, but then because the goal is to come to trust yourself, to become your own master, the goal of mastery of life. There's an old scholastic adage or title, Dominus Sui, Lord or Mistress of Oneself. And so that's the goal, not to believe things because other people tell you, but you believe things, or in fact you don't believe things, you know them because you have found them to be true for yourself. And the order presents tools for people to find that information for themselves.
Okay. Now, where did this information come from? I mean, it's ancient information. Who created this, and when do you think it was created?
Well, I guess the old phrase "lost in the mists of time," but okay. By tradition, you know, all earthly civilization comes from that. The big A word, Atlantis, you know, whatever that means. Whether there was an ancient antediluvian maritime civilization or whatever that is. But somehow or other, there's what we call the primordial tradition, which flows underneath all of human spirituality and wisdom. So in specific, we trace our traditional lineage to the reign of Thutmose III, and Hatshepsut, and this is in Breasted's Records of Egypt. I mean, so it is uncontested that they united all of the mystery schools that were attached to each of the Egyptian temples. These schools were called the Per Anku, the Houses of Life, and that was where initiates studied the mysteries. So they united all these into one order and placed them under Hatshepsut's vizier, Hatshepsut. She was, of course, one of the Hatshepsut, one of the famous ruling women pharaohs. So we traditionally see, okay, they united everything together. Now, probably the content of much of that learning has come down to us through the Corpus Hermeticum and the Practica Hermetica. So that's one part of the Rosicrucian teaching, but there are many other parts too, because the tradition of, it's really a tradition of a way of approaching things, of experiment, trust yourself, and also understand that everything is connected. You know, the adage, as above, so below, from the Emerald Tablet of Hermes. So this flows under many tributaries, the Gnostics, the Kabbalists, the Alchemists, etc., through to eventually the 1600s, when the first three manifestos are created, the Fama Fraternitatis, the Confessio Fraternitatis, and the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz. That's when the Rosicrucians surfaced in Europe, because there was so much turmoil and something had to be done to try to, you know, bring some order and peace back to things. So then it went, you know, the tradition continued through the centuries, and then it manifested many times. For instance, the Guggenheim Museum is having an exhibit, which we're going to be going down to see from the Cultural Center here, on the Rose Croix Salons of late 19th century Paris. Those were inspired and connected to the Rosicrucians of Toulouse, the same Rosicrucians that we received the mandate from through H. Spencer Lewis in 1909, and then he founded the Modern Order in 1915, together with May Banks Stacy. And this was bringing the Rosicrucian work back to North America, where it had been twice before, about 1602, 1603, in what is now Carmel, California, and then during the Revolutionary period in Pennsylvania, where Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were associated with this work.
Yeah, the Rosicrucians have had some pretty big names in the past associated with them.
Right.
People like, you mentioned Franklin, Ben Franklin, for the United States, but Leonardo da Vinci, Sir Isaac Newton.
Francis Bacon.
Bacon. They were fairly heavy hitters in their day.
Now, somebody like Da Vinci, we would not claim that he was a card-carrying Rosicrucian member. The idea is that he had met the Rosicrucians in a monastery on the Amalfi Coast, and so he shared their ideals, and he may have been involved with the Cathars. There's a wonderful novel, Javier Sierra's novel, The Secret Supper, which talks about that. But in other words, he was imbued with the same ideals. Now, Francis Bacon seemed to have been a leader of what we called the leader imperator, was a leader of Rosicrucian work in his day. And we have people like the alchemist Michael Meyer, very clearly associated with the Rosicrucian Order and its work. But the Rosicrucian Order and work is the incorporated name from 1915 onward.
Okay. Okay. How about the Freemasons? Where did they, how'd they fit in with the Rosicrucians?
Well, they also come from the primordial tradition. You will see some similarities between the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons. You know, we both come from the Western esoteric tradition, so our temples have some similarity to one another. There were four directional stations and all that sort of thing. But we're not the same order. We're not linked to them or them or they to us in any way. The fact that there was cooperation in the past is probably evident by the 18th degree in the Scottish Rite, the Rose Quad degree. But we are fully independent. Now, we've cooperated, for instance. I mean, the ideals of the French and American revolutions were inspired by Rosicrucian and Masonic ideals. So, we're not connected to one another, and there are some big differences. Men and women are fully equal in the Rosicrucian order. Our grandmaster here, Julie Scott, is obviously a woman, and we have other grandmasters who are women. Women have all the different administrative posts, and in fact, in Rosicrucian Lodge ritual, there is no part that a woman cannot play, and there are a few parts that a man cannot play. So that's a big difference with Masonry, where no criticism of them, but that is simply a big difference. We have a number of grand lodges around the world, and then headed by the Imperator, Christian Bernard, who lives in Normandy, has offices at the French Grand Lodge. Kind of externally, it's a lodge structure. But some of the mystical teachings are the same. I'm not a Mason, so I don't know. I know some Masonic lodges are more mystically oriented than others. That's just from friends of mine who are Masons.
But your beliefs are primarily metaphysical, is that correct?
Well, and again, if one can talk about beliefs, the traditions, because we talk about knowledge, but yeah, we are a metaphysical order, strongly, I guess, influenced by Hermeticism. If you go to Rosicrucian.org and look in the text section, from 2006 to 2015, we published a long series of Rosicrucian Digest called the Timeline Series, where we talk about all the tributaries that feed into the modern Rosicrucian order, alchemy, Neoplatonism, Kabbalah, Martinism, etc., etc. So that's a really good place to kind of go and see all these traditions that pour into the Rosicrucian order, the Eleusinian mysteries, the Delphic mysteries, the Isis mysteries, the Mithraic mysteries. We have elements of all of those. But I think the core is Hermetic metaphysical philosophy, yes.
Okay. And Helena Blavatsky, she put together a theosophical society that's still in existence. Yeah. Is that something you guys interface with, or is that just another set of metaphysical teachings that are basically very similar?
Well, there are some similarities there. We're not associated with them in any way. We're very independent. We have a motto, the strictest tolerance with the greatest independence. The only other order that we're aligned with is the traditional Martinist order, which was placed under our aegis in 1939-1940. It's based on the teachings of Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin, the unknown philosopher in revolutionary France. But the Theosophical Society are nice people. They're doing good work, but we just are not.
Just not part of them.
Tend a little bit to emphasize the Eastern, especially Indian, part of it. Now, we honor that, and we have some tributaries from the East. There's a podcast, actually, on our website about the Eastern sources of the Rosicrucian Order, our most venerable grandmaster. But we tend to be more Western esoteric.
Okay. Let's talk about some of your, I call them beliefs, but knowledge or whatever. Yeah, what is different? You know, there's a lot of metaphysics out there, and I've read a lot, and I'm sure many of my listeners have read and studied a lot. What is new? What is What is different about the Rosicrucians, where somebody is searching and they say, hey, I want to find out who I am and why I'm here, all right? They're at the beginning of their search and they're looking. Why would they go to the Rosicrucians?
I think there are a couple of reasons. One is because of the systematic nature of our work. In one course of study, which extends over a fairly long period of time, you start at the beginning and you build it up slowly from the basic building blocks to more complex abilities, more complex ideas, experiments in various kinds of psychic ability, work in terms of physical health through the psychic body and through the energies in the human person, the relationship to science, and then also to things like, we practice psychic projection, vibraturgy, where you take an antique and feel something from it, plus all the while concentrating on coming to know yourself. So, for instance, I came to the Rosicrucian Order with a lifetime of spiritual and mystical work, and I found it extremely beneficial because it helped me to organize everything. So that's, I think, first and foremost. The other thing is that it's time-tested and safe. I mean, these are practices, techniques, work that has been done for centuries. And it's guided. It's not just, you read this book or you read that book and then try to figure out how to put it into practice. You're actually guided on, here's the principle, now here's the experiment, write down in your study notebook what you experienced, and learn for yourself. Don't believe it because some great author has penned a wonderful book. That's great. Those books are useful. But come to know it because you have experimented with it and you find it to be accurate and true. And if you don't find that, set it aside. Don't worry about it.
I was just going to say, can you give me an example of that?
Okay. For instance, the question of reincarnation. Some people believe it, some people don't. It is not necessary. Nothing is imposed on Rosicrucians. And so we have early on a section on reincarnation and arguing for it as the best explanation, so that as we go through the successive incarnations, we are taking care of our karma, to borrow phrases from the East, and our soul personality is evolving toward perfection. And there's another section that quotes all kinds of various people who saying why, ancient authorities on why they accept reincarnation, etc. And then we give people experiments to do to look into themselves and see if that rings true for them. And we do have techniques for getting glimpses of past lives. Now we do emphasize that only you can do this for yourself. Anybody who says they can do a session with you and tell you, that you were Cleopatra or Napoleon in a past life is just scamming you. So it's up to the individual to say, this makes sense to me, or no, it really doesn't make sense to me, and then proceed further. I don't know, does that make sense?
Yes, that's good. So it's kind of, this is, you would call a self-study type of thing. I mean, you don't go to classes. How does it work? Okay. How does the curriculum work?
Sure. Well, you go, if you live in our jurisdiction, which is North America, South America, and the Caribbean, you go to rosicrucian.org, you click join the order, fill out the short form, and then you begin receiving what we call monographs, but they're study lessons, in an online, secure online portal. And you start studying. Nobody's going to test you on anything. It's for your own benefit. Now, the primary part of Rosicrucian study is at home. However, We do have local groups all over our jurisdiction, and each of the other Grand Lodges has them all over their jurisdiction, so that you can go and have fraternal rituals. They're not religious rituals, but they're inspiring metaphysical rituals, which help to raise the collective vibratory level, you might say, of the people. We do have discussions. We don't specifically discuss. I should correct that. There are forums where we discuss the specific degrees. You have to be in that degree. Those are held in various places. We also have workshops and classes all over the place on various topics of interest. But yeah, you don't go to classes to study monographs, the lessons. You study those at home. But then you can bring what you've learned to local groups and interact with other people.
Now, I looked at your curriculum online, and it starts out with a first atrium, a second atrium, and a third atrium.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about? What's an atrium?
Okay, well, let's go back a little bit before that. You spend 3 months before that in what's called the postulant period. Those are introductory monographs for 3 months, which kind of introduce you to basic concepts in the order, etc. You know, apostolate in a religious order, we borrowed the name from that, is a probation, somebody kind of a probationary student. And really, it's not so much that we're checking them out, but that they're checking us out and saying, is this for me? Because we don't really impose anything on anybody. Then come the three atriums. So it's 16 months from the beginning of study to the first temple degree. So an atrium, in common parlance, an atrium is like an entryway. And so the three atria are further introductory materials, but a bit more in depth. And within the three atria, every topic that is covered in the first nine temple degrees, which is the basis of the Rosicrucian curriculum, are touched upon and introduced. So that in those 12 months of study, you are being introduced with experiments and various things to all the topics that we study. And again, it's like a spiral. You begin, and then as you go through the temple degrees, you then begin to concentrate on one topic, another topic, another topic. So it's like an expanding spiral, you might say, as you come back to these topics in more and more depth.
How long does it take to go through your nine temple degrees?
About 5.5 years. Well, that's the basic curriculum of your order. Then we have three higher degrees, 10th, 11th, and 12th, which are... they're using material from the first nine, but then going in different directions, more meditation experiences, etc. And all that goes on for, the 12th degree hasn't been finished yet. Each imperator, it's a tradition from for centuries, that each new imperator revises the monograph series. And so we've had probably 6, 7, 8 editions of the monograph since H. Spencer Lewis. First nine are the basic same material, and 10th, 11th, 12th are a little different. So the 12th degree is still being produced. So it goes on for at least a decade or more.
So what if you had a strong understanding of a lot of these concepts? Could you go through them faster?
Well, we don't do that because it's an alchemical process in which it's not just intellectual study, it's an alchemical process in which things have to transmute within you. And I think I mentioned, I came with decades of background, and I didn't feel at all slowed down by the pace of things, because if you have all those decades of resources, then even at the most simple level, you are going to see things in a deeper way. But it's like pieces falling into place, and you begin to see That's how this from over here in my study fits in. Oh, here's from over here, you know, etc. So my testimony as one who was in that situation was that it was perfectly timed.
Okay. Let's talk about a few of the things. I notice in your first atrium you talk about mental projection and telepathy. Mm-hmm. Do you learn how to do mental telepathy?
We do. We have two different techniques for it. Just like not everybody is born to be a marathon runner, but we can all learn to run. So people's abilities are different, and it depends on how much work they put into it. But yes, people practice telepathy. People practice psychic projection. We always use the techniques of projecting desires into the cosmic for fulfillment and manifestation. And those are very common, and that's one of the major bases of what we do. No bones about it. There are ways to do these things. But again, it takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of work, and it depends on how interested you are in it.
How many of your students would you say learned how to be, percentage-wise, learned how to mental telepathy? Do you ever get a feeling on that?
No, I have no idea. We don't. The studies are pretty private. I don't. Well, I think a lot of people do experience telepathy in small ways. For instance, I'm sure you probably have the experience of being in a crowd and looking at somebody, and they turn around and look at you. That they felt the force of your attention. These are things that humans were born with, but we've shut them out because of societal pressures.
I think everybody has had the experience of sitting in a room or sitting in the car. Maybe you're sitting in the car and you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden you're thinking about something that really has nothing to do with the scenery or anything, miles away. And all of a sudden, somebody else in the car speaks up and starts talking about the exact same subject you're thinking about.
Exactly. And part of the point of the Rosicrucian study on those kinds of things is to learn to control that more. It happens spontaneously, but it's nice when we can learn to control it in a more constructive fashion.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, one of the great focuses that we are manifesting right at the moment is on alchemy. We have a beautiful exhibit now in the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum on alchemy, and we are going to be building or renovating one of our buildings to be the first alchemy museum in the United States. The reason is because not only is alchemy part of our heritage, both physical alchemy and spiritual alchemy, but the whole Rosicrucian study is really a path of spiritual alchemy. It's the inner transmutation, inner transformation. And I think it's a subject that is getting a lot of play. The Getty down in L.A. had some really interesting exhibits on alchemy not too long ago. So it's becoming much more popular. It's not just a precursor to chemistry.
Let's talk about alchemy for a second. You know, you mentioned that it's a alchemy. Is spiritual alchemy is a transformation of the soul. It's the change our base nature, our base human nature, into a spiritual nature. So that's the spiritual alchemy. But talk a little about the chemical alchemy. Is that that was to change base metals into precious metals, the gold, silver, or whatever. When you're talking about the alchemy aspect of it, what are you talking about, the physical aspect or the spiritual aspect?
Well, we primarily deal with the spiritual aspect. However, there is increasing interest. We have an alchemy lab at Rosicrucian Park, and Dennis William Houck, who's the curator of our alchemy exhibit, and will be the curator of the Alchemy Museum, does hold classes on practical alchemy. He's one of the world-renowned experts on alchemy. But physical alchemy, the creation into creating lead into gold is kind of the big headline of alchemy. But it really was working with substances to transform them. And in the exhibit, you see all these fascinating various stages of alchemy, all the fascinating vessels and things. And the alchemists took that, the physical work, as a way of focusing the spiritual energy as well. I've never transmuted lead into gold, but we know that substances can be transmuted into one another. We can do them in large particle colliders. You can change any atom into any other atom. It's just very expensive to do so. But there's, if you go through the alchemical steps, you'll see that it's the very process, the working with the substances, distillation, congealing, etc., that is an end in itself.
What's the Rosicrucian concept of consciousness? Is there, you know, what do you guys talk about, you know, and explain to people in that area?
Okay. Consciousness, essentially there is one universal consciousness, cosmic consciousness.
Okay.
We are instantiations of that consciousness. It's sort of like one of the images that H. Spencer Lewis used many years ago was you have a string of lights, you know, like Christmas lights maybe. You have a string of lights, and it's one electric current flowing through the whole thing, that each bulb instantiates that current and produces light. So it's an analogy that we are instances of the universal consciousness manifesting on this plane of existence. And we have many different things, objective consciousness and subjective consciousness and all sorts of things. That's the essential ontology behind it.
Yeah, I like that analogy. That was pretty good. Symbolism. Why is symbolism so important in metaphysics and the Rosicrucians? I assume it's important.
It is, absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny. Today, the word symbolic, you say to somebody, oh, that's just symbolic. It means it's not real, in common parlance. But symbol is actually more real than real, because a symbol is something that allows us to bring two levels of reality together that otherwise could not be placed together. The word itself, symboling, comes from the ancient Greek, when a king who wanted to send off two secret agents, if you will, would break a medallion in half and privately hand one medallion to one agent and one medallion to the other, unbeknownst to either one. But then when they got together in a foreign court, they would each produce a medallion, and they would symboling put them together and realize that they were allies. For instance, one of the most basic symbols that we talked about before, the cross, brings all kinds of things. It's the vertical axis is, you know, as above, so below. The horizontal axis is the union of all things on this plane of existence. The four arms represent the four elements, the four directions. You can go on and on. In just that one symbol, there's so much that is encapsulated that it would take volumes trying to explain it, but then you just look at the cross. It's there. And we have a couple of podcasts, by the way, on our podcast series on rosicrucian.org on mystic symbolism. So,
one of the things you say, I think I picked this off of your website, says the only manner in which our subconscious may receive an impression is in the form of non-words, images, or symbols.
Right.
The subconscious speaks only the language of the symbol, and it understands only the language of the symbol.
Right.
Explain that a little bit.
Well, I think that thinking can take all kinds of forms. We usually think of thinking as kind of internal words. And we do, you know, all of us have the internal verbal dialogue. But that's really our objective consciousness. When we're talking about the subconscious, we're talking about an entirely different level. It's similar to what Jung talks about. He has the collective unconscious. So there you have archetypes, you have symbols. So talking to your subconscious is not, doesn't do anything. But images, emotions, let's say for instance, let's say a person has a bad body image. Well, they're projecting that into their subconscious just in the images that they're thinking about. And they can, all they want to, they can say, I have a wonderful body, I have a great body, my body functions well. But if they're projecting their disgust for their own body into the subconscious, all those words are going to do nothing at all. So you have to really, this is part of, that we learn to purify our, what we send into the subconscious, because it's very important. Because that's where stuff gets done in the human person. So we have to be very careful what messages, through images and symbols and emotions, we send to our subconscious.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, because, you know, if your images and symbols, they're going into your subconscious all day. And if you sit around and you say, okay, I'm going to be positive, and I'm going to sit here, I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to do it really well for an hour, think about how good it is. Well, you got 1 hour at best, and that's really good. Of thinking positive things, and then you got 23 hours of thinking bad things,
you're wondering
which one's going to win.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, there are ways of cleaning it up. Especially, you know, affirmations are fine, but you have to do them right, and you have to do them with symbols, etc. Spencer Lewis, in just a marvelous book, we have it on the website for free, Rosicrucian Principles for Home and Business. It's my favorite of his books. He says, you know, if you've got a toothache, it does absolutely no good to sit there and say, I don't have a toothache. My tooth doesn't hurt. Go to the dentist. Get it taken care of. And then you can use our Rosicrucian, you know, healing stuff to help with the healing process, etc. So our work is extremely practical. And we call it practical mysticism. One of the books we publish by a good friend of mine, Ed Lee, is called Practical Mysticism. And we also have another wonderful book. We have it for free on the website, Spiritual Laws, that govern the universe and humanity by Dr. Edwards, our vice president. These are down to earth. They're practical. This is not pie in the sky stuff.
You talk about things that are for free on the website, which obviously implies that some things aren't for free. What is the cost of this curriculum and belonging to the Rosicrucians?
Right, in our jurisdiction, which would be covered by www.rosicrucian.org, it's $15 a month or $150 a year. American dollars. The other jurisdictions, which you would find at amorc.org, each have their own price structure, which, you know, fits their economic circumstances, etc. But we've been able to, because we do everything online now, we've been able to bring the cost down so low that we're really seeing a lot of membership increase.
So for the $150, mm-hmm. What do you get? Say I go and I sign up and I say, here's my $150 for the first year. What happens? Do I get things online? Do I get something mailed to me? What happens?
You get a combination. You get the primary study materials are placed in your online portal once a month. Each one constitutes a month's study. You do receive the Rosicrucian Digest magazine by mail twice a month, and you receive the Rosicrucian Forum magazine, twice a year, and the Rosicrucian Forum twice a year. There are occasional mailings of other things, and this also authorizes you to attend local groups. And we have local groups in a lot of places around our jurisdiction. Now, if you join a local lodge or atrium or whatever size the group is, they probably will have their own dues because they've got to rent space and, you know, pay electricity and that kind of stuff. By being a member of the Grand Lodge, that authorizes you to participate in those groups. We also have an online community called rosicruciancommunity.org, which is a large social networking site for our members and also members from all around the world, so you can interact with people. There's lots of discussion forums on there, and that is a part of membership. You also can participate in the Department of Instruction teleconferences, video teleconferences, which we run every Wednesday for 2 hours in the afternoon. Sorry about that. We're in New York.
Yeah, you might. Can you shut that window closely?
I will do my best.
Okay.
Hold on just a sec.
Okay.
He's gone now, but let me get the window.
Yeah, he's gone. You're all right. You're all right.
Okay.
He's gone.
And, of course, the other thing is that you are participating in a fraternal order. Your funds go to fund the work of the order, all the free materials that we provide. That's all provided because of the generosity of our members, not only their dues, but also donations. And the donations in the United States are tax deductible. Dues are not, because you're dues to a fraternal order. But you're really participating with a bunch of like-minded people doing good work in the world.
Okay. When you put something in your mailbox, then you download it from there, and then you put it on your computer and run it however, whatever you want to do.
Okay, I'm actually getting a lot of interference from you. I'm not sure why, but I believe
that is happening. You make a bunny's body is done for the show. It started to rather up.
Okay, well, I believe I got what you were asking. So, you do, as I say, when you download your materials, then you have what we call a sanctum period. And that is, we study, and it's a meditative study, not just intellectual study. And then after that, we do whatever experiment is assigned, and then recording the experiences in a study notebook so that you can track what you're doing. But also, the work of the order is service. Jim, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, good. I can hear you now.
Good.
So, and we are really focusing, the last three manifestos from 2000, the Positio, the Apollatio, and the New Chemical Wedding, are about the issues that are facing the world, just as the first three manifestos were back in the 1600s. And we are working together with other like-minded people to assist in the call for spirituality, call for humanism, and call for ecology. So all of this is part of the service that we as members of the Fraternal Order are working on today. A great way to experience that is a site called hope2050.org. From a totally non-political basis, the world has to turn around. There are a lot of big problems going on.
Yeah, you're right.
And, people have to be the solution. Transforming ourselves and then transforming the world. So the studies, besides improving yourself, are for the purpose of being able then to serve humanity and our planet.
Okay. Well, this has been very educational. It sounds like a worthwhile organization to get involved with. You've been there for certainly the better part of 20 years. Are you still learning new things?
Oh, absolutely, every day. And just in experiences like this, it gives you a chance to reflect on your own experience and learn more. But yes, Absolutely. Both in my studies and in my work at the Order, one never stops learning. One is always a student. And besides all the intellectual benefits and all that, it's a virtual home where you are with like-minded people doing good for this this island earth, our fragile home, that's a pretty good thing to be involved with.
That's a pretty good thing. Yeah. Steve Armstrong, hey, thank you so much, Steve, for being with us.
Thank you, Dave, very much for having me.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You're a unique spirit having a life experience. You're far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.